the witness from the internet.
Because these talks, we put them onto we put the MP3 files on our website for people to download later and listen to at their leisure if they weren't able to make it. So, tonight it's my pleasure to welcome back David Parker to speak about demystifying qi. David is an acupuncture therapist in Sebastopol.
Acupressure.
You're right. And it even says that here. Yeah. He has studied and practiced Chinese medicine and qi cultivation arts since 1987 with both Western and Chinese instructors, and teaches ongoing classes here in town about qigong and tai chi guan. So, thank you so much for coming, and I look forward to hearing about
this topic. Thank you. And thank you all for coming. Quite a few familiar faces and all friendly ones, so that is nice as well. I'd also like to very much thank Minnie Rivers Books and Tea for putting on these evenings and for being here at all. It's a, as you all know, I'm sure, a very unique and wonderful resource here in Sonoma County, and I was just saying I think it's the only bookstore like this anywhere around. So Stuart, Rob, Jim, Amba, and Daniel, and there may be more, but those are the people that I know here. Thank you very much for being here and putting on these talks. My name is David Parker. I live here in Sebastopol, and as you heard, I am an acupressure therapist. Started studying Chinese medicine in 1988, Tai Chi and Qigong in 1987, and have been at it ever since. My practice also includes teaching Qigong and Tai Chi. I have a once-a-week Monday Qigong class and a once-a-week Saturday morning Tai Chi class. If people are interested in finding out more about that or my practice, you can pick up a business card. I have a website that will tell you more. So tonight, let me just outline what I want to talk about tonight. The topic is demystifying qi, and I really like that title. It's a little misleading because I probably won't be able to completely demystify qi. It's a very wide and deep subject, and it permeates all parts of Chinese culture and life, and has existed in Chinese thought for probably at least 3,000 years. So it goes back a long ways. Being as it does go back that far, we, of course, can really have no idea what people really thought of qi 2,000, 3,000 years ago. We can't really imagine what life was even like then. However, we can be quite sure that those people lived very much in nature. I mean, I don't think there was anything but nature and human beings in nature at that time. So they were very closely connected to natural forces and rhythms and phenomena. And that is what they looked at when they were trying to figure out how the world worked, how people fit into that world, and coming up with ideas such as qi, which, as I say, is very, very basic to the whole culture. Qi is in philosophy, it's in classical and modern literature, it's in martial arts, it's in medicine, it's in daily life, it's in gardening, cooking, really everything. We'll start out going all the way back and looking at the first character representations for qi and learning what we can from that. This is one of my favorite things to do with Chinese concepts, is to look at the pictographs that they use to describe these things and try and figure out what they represented. And you can get a lot of information from that. Chinese language, especially classical Chinese language, is very, very terse, very, very concise. They use very few words. Every word mattered. I was going to say no words were left out. Actually, some words were left out. And people had to understand that and be able to fill in some of the blanks. One reason for this, of course, this is before there was any kind of printing, and writing a book, not to mention even a few sentences, was not easy. You were carving into bone or wood or stone, and you didn't waste your characters. So Chinese language is very terse. There are very few characters, and they have a very wide interpretation of meanings. And that is our task, is to figure out, you know, what some of those meanings are. And it's really a lot of fun. I think we'll be able to have some fun with that. So we're going to look at the history of the etymologies, or the development of the characters, from the first ancient pictograph up to the modern character for qi. We'll then come into the present time and look up qi in a current large dictionary. And if you read, some of you may have seen the little blurb I made for this class. When you look up the word qi in a modern large Chinese dictionary, you find up to 23 different definitions for it. So it covers a lot of ground. As you'll see, some of those, there's, you know, some overlap there, but it's more than you may think. So we're going to look at the modern or current definitions of qi after we look at the historical definitions and uses of it. Also look at some phrases. There are hundreds of words and phrases that have the character for qi in it. And some of them are also quite amusing and surprising for us. We'll look at qi in medicine and Daoyin, which is an old word for qigong practice. So the more medical and development-oriented practices have very specialized and technical uses of qi. Then we'll look at qi a bit more briefly in philosophy and classical literature, in the arts, and then in everyday life. And that will cover a pretty good scope of activities in China. And my hope is to have a few moments towards the end for any questions or comments or anything anybody has to say, and I want to then stand up for about the last 10 minutes and practice a little qigong together. It would be a really nice way to finish things off tonight. And that will bring it from words and in our thoughts and put it in our bodies. And that, to me, you know, all of the history, all this other fun stuff is interesting, but for me it's really about what is qi in life for us. And there are ways we can practice it, and there are ways we can just see the world in terms of qi. So, Rob and Amba, I'm going to try and watch the time, but if we get on towards about 9:15 and I'm still madly going on here, start waving your hands if you will. Okay. So, one thing I would like to start off this talk with is something that one of my Chinese teachers would always say at the beginning of his talks, and that is to please take everything that you hear about the Chinese arts, including what I'm going to say tonight, with a grain of salt. Again, the origins of these things are in the past thousands of years. What we have to go on are very brief inscriptions from those times, and then a lot of commentary and interpretations by various people that came later. And this is true with other areas of classical Chinese in the philosophy and literature as well. But we have to realize there's a lot of opinion and a lot of people's ideas about things, interpretation and opinion of, you know, what the ancient people thought of these things. And so different people will have different ideas. And this is fine. This is part of the beauty of it, really. It's not strict science. There's a lot of art in this as well. So I have pretty good sources. I've been pretty diligent about studying it myself. I've had some good Chinese teachers, a couple of wonderful traditional practitioners. Older gentlemen, when I met them, both unfortunately have passed away now. But the first was a scholar of history, Chinese history, medicine, and calligraphy, and the second was a lineage practitioner in a traditional art of Yin-style Bagua, which included martial arts, medicine, and qi cultivation. And I will also say they didn't speak any English, And I don't speak Chinese. I know a bit of Chinese and a bit about the language. But fortunately, there was a very excellent Westerner who translated and knew both of those gentlemen and studied with them. He's now lived in China 23 years. And his name is Andrew Nugent Head. I think he's pretty much in China now, so unlikely that you will run across him. But really wonderful person who really opened up these things and these people to me. So I want to thank all of them for making it possible for me to be here. So before we actually start talking about Qi, we have to back up and talk very briefly about a couple of things in Chinese culture that are very much related to this. And the first is the basic cosmology of Taoism, or how Taoism views the world, our world, into coming into being. And it's very, very simply stated. Some of you may have heard of somebody named Lao Tzu. He wrote the Tao Te Ching. That's a pretty well-known book. We'll be talking about him a bit later, but he stated very succinctly that the Tao creates the one create the two create the three, and the three create the 10,000 things. And so that's a very nice, simple saying about how things came into being. So a little explanation is in order. The Tao is something is called the Way. It's something that's considered unfathomable. The very first line in the very first verse of the Tao Te Ching is, "The Tao that can be told is not the eternal Tao." Meaning that as soon as we say its name, it's not even the Tao anymore. So it's beyond our ability to think about it, conceptualize it, or talk about it, and yet we have to talk about it. So that's our challenge. So it's saying that the Tao basically created itself. The Tao brought itself into being, and that was still one. So that's the Tao creates the one. The next step is that the one creates the two. And the two, something that people have seen, the symbol, known in the West as the yin-yang symbol usually, it's called the taiji in Chinese. And this is the two. This is the separation of undifferentiated oneness, or Tao, into the two most simple things that there could be. And yin and yang, or taiji, are very briefly thought of as opposing and complementary phenomena. Things that complete each other, contrast each other, create each other, and transform into one another. Neither one can predominate entirely. In this diagram, you see movement, you see differences in quantity and shape. You see that at the height of yang up here, represented by the white, there's a little bit of yin inside. So they're constantly changing, one into the other. Out of this, as I say, undifferentiated oneness that was the Tao, that was sentient before anything existed, came this opposing principle that started to turn and created the three. The three, the most basic representation of the three, is heaven, earth, and mankind. So the yang, which is on top here, is heaven, or the heavens, or everything that is above us. It's insubstantial, it's air, it's space. The yin, which is at the bottom here, is everything below us. That's the earth. It's solid. We're yin. Mankind is, well, I jumped the gun there, because we are the three. We're the combination of yin and yang, and so we have both of those things within us. You could say, and I don't want to go into this too far, that we're yin plus yang plus yin plus yang. That is these things start out very simply and can get quite complex. That's another interesting paradox about Chinese thought. The three then go on, heaven, man, heaven, earth, and mankind, go on to produce the 10,000 things. And that's the many and all things that are in our world, all phenomena, all things, all ideas. So I'll get just a little bit ahead of myself and say qi can also be looked at as the three, as the third thing. Qi, in a way, is the motivation of the interaction of yin and yang. So qi came along and emerged, even though it's not spoken of, at the same time as yin and yang. Some people say, in fact, it's pretty standard theory that qi existed in Tao before there was even any separation. So anyway, I will leave that at that for right now. The main thing we want to remember is that yin and yang interact to create other things, and they're motivated to do that by qi. Then I want to say a couple of things about Chinese language, since we're going to be talking about characters and you're going to be hearing some odd words and pronunciations. So, first off, there are characters. And I don't want to pass this out quite yet, but here's a sheet that has some pictograms and characters. Most people have seen Chinese characters. Don't worry, everybody will get one of these in just a minute. So that is the Chinese language. They started out as pictograms. You know, the old character, 3,000 years ago, for the moon, for instance, was something that looked like that. My drawing is not very good. A little more of a crescent. It was easily identified as a moon. Today, this one. It's not the best because this character doesn't quite fit as well, but the character for moon is something more like this today. So over about 3,000 years, we went from easily recognized pictures of things to these more stylized characters. Some of the characters are still pretty obvious about what they represent, but those are Chinese characters. Then, unfortunately, there are two kinds of Chinese characters in the modern world today. What's called fanti are the old Chinese characters, older. They're more complicated. They still have a lot of the old pictures in them, and they are very rich with meaning. The modern characters are called genti. They were developed in the 1950s, I believe, and they simplified. The idea was to make it easier for people to memorize and learn characters and use them. You could also say it was a kind of a dumbing down process, because if you're used to fanti, the old characters, and you look at the new ones, you think, wow, you know, they took out half the meaning of this character in simplifying it. Fanti, or genti, the simplified script, is only used in mainland China and I believe Singapore these days. Taiwan and other countries that use Chinese script still use the older characters. And there's, according to my friend in China, fanti is starting to come back. So maybe in another 50 years or something, the simplified characters will be gone and we'll be back to the true Chinese language. The second part of Chinese language is pinyin, or phonetic representations, transliterations they're called. How do you take the characters and replace them with letters and make it more or less possible to pronounce the words? And there have been several systems for that over the years. It mostly leads to confusion, because nowadays the word qi, for instance, I don't know what people think we'll find out here. Should have brought an eraser for this. Hand. So some people may have seen qi like this. Chi with an apostrophe there. That's an older style, but it may be more familiar to us. Tai Chi, which is really pronounced Tai Chi, ends up being this. The modern pinyin is qi, qi. And I misspoke here, because this is actually a different character in Taiji than this qi. But the modern phonetic system is pinyin, and it spells Chi Qi, and it spells some other words that you may be familiar with also a bit strangely. So that's another thing that we have to put up with in studying this. Also, the Chinese is a tonal language. There are four main tones. You can pronounce one word four different ways, in other words, with a rising tone, a flat tone, a U-shaped tone, and a falling tone. This also adds complexity, can make it hard to understand. That's not a problem for us, but it is makes it challenging to learn spoken Chinese, because a very slight difference in pronunciation can completely change the meaning of the word. And finally, we have English. Oftentimes, especially in the kind of stuff we're talking about, there's no simple one-word translation of a concept. It makes it difficult. We tend to want to simplify things, and so we'll often have incomplete ideas about what things are. And I think we'll find that with Qi tonight. So, in my opinion, it's worthwhile learning pinyin for words in Chinese that you're interested in. Because then you can attach multiple meanings to that pinyin word that you don't have something in your head for already. And you can often, with these more complex ideas, get a better idea in your own mind of what they are. So I recommend people, for things they're interested in, use the pinyin words, use the Chinese words. Okay, so I bet most people here have heard of Qi, and I'm wondering if anybody would be interested in volunteering an idea of what it is.
Life energy.
That's the most common one that we hear, life force, life energy, or vital energy. When we get to the dictionary, we'll find that that's definition number 10, a term used in Chinese medicine. So that is one thing, and then that shows that we're more exposed to kind of the technical versus everyday nature and uses of Qi. Any others? That's the most common one. Sometimes people...
Breath.
Breath is slightly off, but air or gas, we'll find out, actually. But we're getting ahead. But we've come up with the most common things that Westerners think of Qi. So now I will hand out these. I just didn't want your full attention. And we'll talk about the character. So I've come across three ancient ideas for Qi. And they are cloud Qi, ritual prayer, and wind. And that is the first character in the top left. It's labeled cloud Qi. And it's a very simple picture of three horizontal lines. And sometimes...
David, excuse me, we need a few more cups.
Okay.
I have a few more.
Not the same
thing. That's my note.
I don't want
you'll those. Yeah, you'll know more than me.
Okay.
One more.
So we'll start with the three lines. This is a pictograph and dates to the Oracle Bones era, which is in the neighborhood of 3,000 years ago. Sometimes you'll see that shows three pretty equal lines. Sometimes it will be a little bit more like this, three slightly different length lines. Sometimes the top two are a bit shorter. Sometimes the middle one is the shortest. I kind of like this representation, with the bottom line being the largest, the middle the shortest and the top in between. And this is a representation of the three that we talked about earlier. As I say, this dates from what's called the Oracle Bones era. This is the earliest known Chinese characters or pictograms are found on bones, carved into bones, and turtle shells. And date from the Shang era, about 1600 to 1100 BC. And we'll look at the idea of cloud chi first. The character can be interpreted as mists that rise from the earth to become clouds, or the offering up of a ritual prayer. I'll quote a gentleman named Duan Yusai here, who said, "It's the shape of the rising clouds." So let's consider what we have here in this character, thinking back to the one creates the two create the three. We have the two and the three in this character. The two are the bottom line, which is the most solid, the heaviest, and that represents earth. Earth is yin and it is substance. It's solid underneath us. The top line, smaller, a little less substantial than the bottom, is heaven. That is above us. It's not solid. It's space. It's openness. And the middle line is qi. In this sense, in the form of mists rising up to form the shape of clouds. So it's insubstantial. It's visible sometimes. Other times it's not visible. It's not an object. It is tangible. You know, you can touch that fog. You can feel fog. You can see it. It gives you a feeling. And yet, you can't define most of the time where it begins and where it ends. And it's not something that you can put into a box and take home. So it's not an object like this teacup, and yet it can be felt. So it has the two and it has the three. And that third, in that middle place, has the function, we could say, interpreting a bit of connecting heaven and earth. It starts as an invisible force coming out of the earth. It starts to take some shape and some ability to be seen, and it rises up and it forms the clouds which are in the sky or in heaven. So it's something that bridges heaven and earth. It can also be viewed as something that moves from earth to affect heaven. And these ideas of connectivity, of motivation and action are very important ideas for qi. As I said, it's insubstantial, can have shape, is tangible but not an object, and it has an upward movement in this case. Our big dictionary, which is called the Hanyu Da Ziduan, lists three other definitions for this original character that also dated from this time period of 1000 BC, plus or minus. And that is to give, to beg, ask, or pray, as in offering up a prayer. And when we offer a prayer, it's in an upward direction. And it's something that comes out of us and is insubstantial. And yet, we hope it has an effect on heaven. So you can see where the those two ideas fit together. Something that's interesting about the way Chinese arts and thinking are put together, and this is not unique probably, but definitely in Chinese thought, is that you start with one idea, and when you expand on it, you don't forget that first idea. You add on to it. And then when you want to go further, you take those first two ideas and further develop it. So we can't forget the original meanings as we go further. As we add meanings to qi and broaden our view, it should also retain most of, if not all, of the original meanings. So to beg, to ask for, and to pray can be thought of as you know, making that kind of emotion towards something that you hope will result in an effect or an action. And then finally, to take or to save. So those other meanings, we won't look into those too much because it's hard to find much about them. But interesting to note that there was more than just this idea of cloud chi, which had the ideas of motivation and connectivity to it. Okay, there, right below that first character is a variation that still has the three lines, but it includes the idea of waves. So we think, as Jalon said, of vital energy or life force or the idea of an energy. And energy, physics tells us, is in the form of a wave. Waves are also something that are observable in nature, of course, in the ocean, even on other large bodies of water. Also, you can see wave-like motions in trees when the wind is blowing, in fields of grass, things like that. So they didn't know about the physics of waves, or maybe they did. There were some very intelligent people back in those days, but they represented chi sometimes, thinking in terms of a wave, a wavy line instead of a straight line. So that starts to add a little bit of meaning to it. Below that, we see one of the first changes that was added to the character. This is in the Zhou Dynasty, still pretty old. We're still in ancient China, probably 500 to 800 BC. And they added that change in the top line. And that was probably just to distinguish it from other characters. There are a number of other three-lined characters, including the character for three, which is San. That's the one that I wrote down there. So somebody probably made a change just to distinguish this character. Then there, below that, is a bit of further variation in the later Zhou. They added a dropped line and a hook, although it doesn't show on these pictograms too much, to the bottom line of that character, sometimes retaining the little hook on the top and sometimes not. But you can see, you know, some of the variation. And this is the first place that chi starts taking on new meanings, and particularly that idea of breath or air. In this case, breathing in and out. So while breath is not something that you find in the modern dictionary, at one time the idea of breathing in and out was part of chi. And this was definitely related to cultivation and medicine practices. So they're starting to change and add to the meanings at this point. Let's see if there's anything else I want to say about that. No, but over to the right of those characters, not at the top, we'll go back to that in a minute, but you'll see to the right of these two pictograms here, another character, another chi character on top, meaning the chi of breathing. And this was used primarily in Taoist cultivation and general qi cultivation usage. And a change in the character here also adds more to the meaning. The fire radical was, it's hard to see in this character, but if you look down on the section other characters used for qi, you see the fire character down there. A version of that character is used in this upper one, the chi of breathing. But in any event, it doesn't matter that they changed it a little bit. But the idea of fire, of warmth, of that kind of activity was added to the meaning of chi. Before that, it was much more water. It was mists, and it was atmospheric. So now we have fire, and fire, as we know, heats things up. And kind of gets things going, and that is also something that's in the meaning of qi. Below that is a different form of qi, meaning a mist or vapor, a slightly specialized definition of it, that includes the water radical in this case, the character for water. Again, if you know your Chinese characters at all, it's hard to recognize. It's the part on the left. Chinese characters are often made up of other Chinese characters. And when they put them together, sometimes they will change the shape of the characters to, for any number of reasons. Some stylized, some just for fitting them into a place. But that's why on the left is the simple diagram for water. The right-hand part you'll see looks a lot like one of these over here. So they added water to qi to make it mean mist or vapor, and they added fire to qi to indicate the art of breathing in and out. Not just breath, but actually breathing in and out. So an active thing there. Now, going down to our next couple of characters here, the one on the right is the modern character, and that is in a Chinese font. And so that shows what the script looks like. On the left is a more pictogram version of that. And there is a phenomenon in Chinese language called tongjiazi, whereby, and this happens with ancient characters, when ancient characters had similar sounds or shapes or forms or meanings, this is just the way Chinese is, I can't help it, they would oftentimes interchange their meanings, or one of those characters would come to stand in for the other, or there would be an exchange of meanings between them. I don't know too much about that, but it is something that happened pretty frequently with ancient characters. In our case here, tongjiazi happened with Xi, which is the character over to the right, spelled in pinyin, XI, not QI, and pronounced Xi, phonetically SHEE, and it means a grain ration, or to give rice, or to give nourishment. And the rice part of it is that little starburst that now appears in the qi character over on the left. So those two characters got together, they interchanged some meaning and some form, and we got a new character for qi and added the meaning of rice, which is nourishment for the Chinese. That is their staple grain. Another extremely important part of Chinese culture. So now we have the original meanings of something that connects something, something that moves upward, that's insubstantial and yet tangible, all of those things. The idea of fire was added to it, a motivating aspect. The idea of breathing actively was added to it. Mist or water vapor was in it originally and reaffirmed later on, and now nourishment or rice, to give nourishment, is added to the character too. So we have something that is intangible, that is nourishing, that can perform work or functions like that. So we have quite a bit of meaning in the character now, and this is the modern character. A couple of other characters used for qi over the years. There are a number of other ones that were used too, but these are the ones that are easiest to find. Fire in the pre-Tang era, Tang Dynasty, it's about 600 to 900 AD, I believe. So there's fire again. And then below that, oxygen, reaffirming or stating the idea of breath and air. So, a little more information into this character. Now let's go up to these characters up here in the top right. And this is just sort of an interesting little side view here. And this is just another neat thing, I think, about Chinese language. And in Chinese language, as well as a lot of Chinese arts and thinking, there's the idea of interlocking, of things fitting together into a whole, being able to be put together in a logical way. So what I want to point out here is that in the old character, we have the idea to beg, and I have in parentheses for food, it was really just to beg or offer up that prayer. A new character was used. You'll see part of the later Qi character in the top, and actually part of the the same character in the bottom, although in a different style. And this character took that meaning of to beg, and particularly meant to beg for food. The square character to the right, that box, is the Ko character, and it means mouth. That was added to this Qi, meaning to beg for food character, and he ended up with another character that's pronounced Qi still, but spelled in pinyin, C-H-I, and it means to eat. So this idea of begging, a mouth was added to that, and now it means to eat. And it is similar in pronunciation to Qi, but not the same word, and not spelled the same way in pinyin. In the old days, Daoyin or Qigong practitioners were considered to eat Qi in their practice. So, you know, just showing how that there are a lot of ideas that come together to form this thing called Qi, which is very deep and very broad. Then at the very bottom here, there's one other cool character related to Qi, and anybody have any idea what this might be down here?
It looks like a logo of something.
Well, that's interesting. I hadn't thought of that before. This is an ancient character. This is kind of in the pictogram realm. It's any other ideas? There are two of the three lines there, wavy lines.
Looks like an eye.
Does look like an eye. That's pretty good, I guess, but that's not what it is. That is an acupuncture point.
Oh.
And the modern character for acupuncture point does not look like that. It's pronounced, it's shui, more or less. And it means a cave or a cavity, as well as an acupuncture point. So there's that idea of an acupuncture point being a hole or an access point, a depression or something. But anyway, there's the point, and it's sitting on top of the wavy qi, and it's just a cool thing. I can't resist showing you one other character that also demonstrates the coolness of Chinese, especially the old Chinese. And that is, this is the character, the old pictogram for a shaman. And the center of it is this character, which is gong. And for people who practice things, this is the part of the gong character of gong fu or qigong. And it means to work. Then over here, we have run. And over here, we have run. And that's the character for man, or mankind, a person. So a shaman is a person who does some kind of work with another person. Which is kind of neat. Any questions, or anybody have anything that they're mystified about at this point?
I'm mystified about why, once the character changes to this, for example, it's still pronounced Qi.
Mm-hmm. But it's a different character. So if you take a Chinese dictionary and look up QI, you know, what we're talking about here, there will be, maybe 60 or 80 pinyin words spelled QI. And they're all different characters.
So, because like in Arabic, you'll have, like, the root the same,
mm-hmm.
but then the pronunciation changes.
Right. So I can't get too far into sidetracked here in Chinese language, but Chinese characters, as I mentioned, are often made up of more than one character. One character is the semantic part, I believe it's called. It carries the meaning. Second character often is for pronunciation. Sometimes both of them can carry meaning as well as one providing the pronunciation. So that might, you know, be a similar concept there. But as I said, I said that brief thing about the different forms of characters and then different transliterations into pinyin and the pronunciation of different pinyin words being very similar but different. And so this is where the kind of thing where you bump into that.
So it's all cheat, or are you saying they pronounce a little bit?
Slightly different pronunciation. Mm-hmm. But QI, I mean, there are Chinese words in pinyin spelled CHI. Pronounced qi, you know, and to a Westerner, it's going to sound just like QI. Any of the four tones of QI. Anyway.
David?
Yes.
These two characters down here next to oxygen?
Yes.
With the first embedded in the second? Could you explain that a little bit again? The one.
Okay.
And the second part looks like the evolution of the
That's right.
And then the first one looks like it's got the early chi in it as well with the three.
Oh, the three lines. Well, that's interesting. Actually, the one on the left is the character for sheep, means sheep, interestingly. It's pronounced yang, and that is how the character for oxygen is pronounced, yang. So that word or that character, which means sheep, is carrying the pronunciation. The other part is the semantic part. And as you noticed, it's the same outer part of this modern character up here that has the rice inside it. And by the way, here's a good example of Fanti and Genti. This is Fanti here, the old script, and it has that upper part representing the mist going up, and it has the rice. The Genti just has the outer part. It doesn't have the rice in it at all. So if you didn't, you know, if you didn't know about that etymology, you wouldn't necessarily get any of that meaning about nourishment or cooking, because nourishment is cooked rice, you know, which implies fire and steam and stuff. So all of that would be lost in the simplified character. But both of these at one time were used for oxygen. This is the more modern version of it, with the other part carrying the pronunciation. But a good question. That brought up a good explanation there. Yes?
Why would you say it's important for us to understand what she is?
Well, because, we'll get to this a bit more, because, you know, I'm talking about many definitions, and we're not even up to the 23 definitions yet. But qi is, simply stated, the stuff of life. It's what keeps us alive. And for us as Westerners, when we get to qi in daily life, time goes fast, doesn't it? We'll see that Chinese people, for the most part, the average Chinese would not know anything about any of this technical or historical aspect of this character. They would not be able to tell you much about life force or breathing or qigong or medicine or anything else. They would have some other ideas about it that are common usage. So we will, and it's very important. I mean, it's like a well-understood part of all of life in China. So very essential there. For us, it's more if we're interested in cultivation. Qi is what makes things work well for us. We all have qi in us. I'm digressing here a bit, and I'll try not to go too far. But we all have qi. Without it, by definition, we would not be alive. When qi disperses, san qi, that's death, non-life. When qi gathers, there's life. So through understanding qi a bit and then practicing it at the beginning, remember I said that the most important part for me is bringing it into life, into something we can use. Practicing qi organizes it, refines it, and strengthens it in our system. A not entirely accurate but pretty good way of looking at qi is that it's a template or a pattern for our physical body. The yin-yang relationship, the Taiji relationship, I've lost that, but you know, the yin-yang symbol, in the human is qi and blood. Blood refers to everything that's physical. Qi refers to everything that's energetic. Our thoughts, a mind activity, qi itself. We could extrapolate it to the nervous system. When we improve qi, we'll eventually improve our blood, in other words, our bodies. So for our health and well-being, for our development, qi in itself is not spirit, but it's related to spirit in that a qi practice can create the conditions to allow a person to develop spiritually. So, you know, those are the reasons that I'm interested in qi. And then the other thing for me is that now, as I understand more about it, the old guys were looking at nature to figure this out. I now, knowing a little bit about qi, look at nature and go, oh, look at that. There's, you know, what they talked about in that old medical book. You know, here's what those old guys were seeing. Here's the interaction of yin and yang. And that, you know, to me is interesting. It may not be to other people so much, but it's like all of a sudden I have a new set of eyes, a new way of seeing things. Everything from interpersonal interactions to the weather to, you know, everything really. Okay, I'm going to forge on here a bit. So this modern character was put together by the time of the Han Dynasty, and this is the early imperial period in China. And this is Han started, I think, around 200 or 300 BC, went to a couple hundred AD. It was a really sort of a Renaissance period in Chinese culture. By this time, I'll go on to that in just a minute. Qi had the meanings of vitality and life-sustaining substances and functions, as well as fire and steam, on top of qi's original connective, transforming, and motivating properties. So a lot of meaning. In medicine by this time, qi was widely differentiated and understood. The theory was quite well developed. There are medical classics from the turn of the millennia, around 200 BC to zero, that are still in use today, that are the de facto source material on Chinese medicine. Qi was very well developed by this time. One thing I did not mention is that in the very early Chinese classics, such as the I Ching, which is 1,000 years before this, qi is not mentioned at all. It's a little confusing because the I Ching has both the text written by one person, and then which is very terse, as I explained, very short, and then a lot of commentary and interpretation by people that followed. Those people did talk about qi, but the person who wrote the I Ching, whoever that may have been, did not. By this time, the second round of classics, the medical classics, Lao Tzu's Tao Te Ching, as I said, Confucius was in this time period, Mencius, his student, Chuangzi, Lao Tzu's student, all of these people were writing and active in this time period, and they knew what qi was, and they were talking about it a lot and developing it. One small tangent here. I can't help myself because this is interesting too, or maybe not. But I talked about the three: heaven, earth, and mankind. That triad idea. There are others. A man, woman, and a child is another. There are many. The two medical classics are the Nei Jing and the Nan Jing, so-called, two different books. The Nei Jing, the first one, itself was separated into two books. Each had nine chapters. That's three times three. The Nan Jing came about 200 years later after the Nei Jing and further expounded on it. It was written in 81 chapters, which is nine times nine. And none of this is by accident. So the Chinese were very, very much into logic, numerology, and order. And, you know, to varying degrees, some areas of Chinese culture more than others. The Taoists were especially into logic and order. And it shows up everywhere again. So just covered the wide variety of meanings for qi, and it now really is in covers all of the natural world as well as mankind's physiology and psychology. So right there, it's a concept that's applied broadly to everything that man knew about. And I'll just mention that there is one other origin story for qi, other than this cloud qi idea. I did say it at the very beginning, and it was the idea of wind. And this one, I may even predate the cloud qi, and I haven't been able to run this one down as much, so I won't say it in detail. But it's the idea that wind came from heaven to affect things and people on earth, and that it was the wind that was the qi. So this, in terms of yin-yang theory, or taiji theory, this makes perfect sense. Because one of the things in the classics and with taiji is that the old people writing about it would often only give you one side of the equation. Again, it was hard to write books, inscribing in stone and so forth. So they would tell you one side, and you had to figure out what the opposite was, that it also had to be true by definition of yin and yang, because they exist together all the time. So if there's an invisible force coming from the earth, moving upwards to affect things in heaven, there has to be an invisible force from heaven moving downward to affect things on earth. And so you have this other idea of the wind being qi, coming from heaven and affecting earth.
Just a point of clarification. So the concept of yin and yang is basically a principle of organization or manifestation, but qi itself is not divided into opposites, only when it...
Yes, you're correct. Qi is not divided. Qi can be thought of as the motivating factor in the interaction of yin and yang. So
only
qi,
when it manifests, does it become divided in yin?
No, all things have yin and yang characteristics and can be divided up and studied that way. But yin and yang interact, and what makes them interact is qi.
But qi itself is not divided.
That's right. Qi is undifferentiated, and actually what's called yuan qi, it's called original qi, and that is considered to be a part of the Tao, which by definition is undifferentiated.
So what causes the division?
Qi, really. It's creation. Is what causes that separation. It's like the Tao is sentient. It's we're tangenting here a bit, so I won't go too far into this. But you know, the Tao is just before heaven and earth, before there was space or a universe or anything else. There was Tao, and that's the thing that we can't even talk about. But the symbol for it is an open circle. You know, just the line of a circle. No color or a single color inside, undifferentiated. It's like a clear sky. Out of that, just it's like the cosmos wants to move, and what makes the cosmos want to move is qi. And qi motivates, this is stretching it a bit, but qi motivated the Tao to separate into yin and yang, which then got together, created the third thing, and then those three get together and create everything. So it's just that there is a natural impetus. And one of the meanings of qi is momentum also. So it does carry that idea that there's inertia. And it's a very good question, because it does have to start somewhere. And what takes it from nothingness or undifferentiated into something? It's a great question. And the simple answer for us tonight is that qi does that. All right, the definitions of qi. So I'm going to just list them. I could not access this dictionary. Fortunately, somebody else could. And these definitions are paraphrased. I'm going to just read them here. And by the way, to give you some idea of the scope, this is... the section on qi in this dictionary starts on in the third volume, page 2002. The first definition is cloud qi. The second is the common noun for gases of all kinds, and that includes air. 3 is the weather. 4 is solar terms, which means it was an ancient division in the lunar calendar devised by the Chinese. 5, well, here it is, breathing. Not breath, the action of breathing. 6, smell, odor, or flavor. The verb, to smell. Chinese characters and words can oftentimes be used as nouns or verbs or even descriptors, depending on how they're used. So it's both a smell, an odor, or a flavor, and the verb to smell. To anger or upset. In other words, to anger or upset another person. A philosophical concept of ancient China. Slight understatement there. Number 10, a term from Chinese medicine. So there's the one that we know about. A term in ancient Chinese literary criticism. Momentum, particularly referring to spiritual or emotional momentum. Style or habit, particularly a bad habit. Will, also conspiracy, that is, the joining of wills to create action. A spirit, feeling, or temperament. Prevailing custom, the general mood or atmosphere. A meteorological phenomena or view of something. Strength, the various qualities or nature of people or objects. Destiny, fortune, fate, life. A dialect, an adjectival additive to words that lends any of the various meanings listed above to other nouns. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden, it's gotten much bigger. You will notice that there are a couple of general categories there. There are all the insubstantial things like cloud chi, the gases, weather, breathing, a smell, all those sorts of things. A lot of stuff that happens in the sky. Tian chi nowadays, heaven's chi, that's the weather. So that's how it's looked at there. And then there's this idea of things that stir things up or motivate things, especially in people. You know, Chinese people, without having any technical knowledge of medicine, they certainly know that when people get angry, something has stirred them up or motivated them to get there. So that is qi. This is how qi goes into daily life. Qi motivates the turning of yin and yang. It also motivates people to get angry or upset about something. And then there are some miscellaneous ones. But you see that it covers a lot of ground. And when I looked in an online Chinese dictionary for words that are made up of the qi character, in other words, words that have multiple characters, including qi, I found 250 of them, which I won't list for you, but here are a few. These are words that include the qi character. Popularity, electric, courage, tone of voice, natural gas, gasoline, in one breath, windpipe, momentum, again, central heating, indignant, pneumatic, to ventilate, to be very angry, safety airbag, cars, and climate change, which is qi hao bian hua, so you can use that at your next cocktail party to impress people, marsh gas, bronchitis, to take courage, electrification, to heave a sigh of relief, to have a grudge against, to lose one's cool, ambition, graceful, childish nature, air conditioner, bad temper, radiator, so there's heat and cool, heroic spirit, red-blooded, to feel suffocated or oppressed, loss in gambling, and so on. So it, you know, and when, you know, some of those are kind of funny, and I put in some that would seem funny to us, but you know, if you stop, and I don't have time to go into it, but if you stop and start thinking about those, you will find one of those original meanings of qi that is helping to support and put together the idea of what these words were. here are a few expressions. There are lots of expressions. So this is all in kind of qi in daily life. Qian qi bao dao is the weather report on TV every day. Bu yang ke qi, you're welcome. And that is like, don't mention it. Literally, don't use a guest's airs. In other words, be family, yeah. Feel at home. Chi chi or ji chi, to vent one's spleen. Neither of those words are spleen, but we know what that means. Huan chi, to get some breathing room. Tong chi, to ventilate, aerate. Be in touch or keep each other informed. And that's actually kind of a cool thing that don't really have time to go into, but that's a neat one. And here's one of my favorites. Qi su wo. That really ticks me off. Or worse, depending on the tone of voice. Literally, the literal translation is qi me to death. Okay, so I'm going to kind of skip Chinese medicine and Dao Yin or Qigong here. I've talked a little bit about Qigong. Qigong is basically Qi practice or Qi skill. They're exercises, and we're going to do a little bit of one tonight in a few minutes that answer the question, why do we want to know about and practice Qi?
And all the terms that you mentioned using qi, you know, often you hear the phrase, oh, he has bad qi. Is there a negative form of qi?
No, well, now there's a tangent that could take up the rest of the evening. But you hear that term a lot. In my opinion, and from what I understand, and so it may be a translation thing, there is no such thing as bad qi. Qi is qi. Here's the important thing. Anything, qi is neither beneficial nor harmful. Qi is just qi. Anything that is powerful enough to help us is powerful enough to hurt us. So qi in the right circumstances and quantities and places is very good for us. Qi in the wrong quantities, wrong places, wrong activities is very bad for us. So I think that's where that idea comes from. Qi can help us, and it can hurt us. Qi doesn't care. It just is. You know, it has no opinion about that. And that's the nature of Taoist thought. Taoist thought is not moralistic, or socially moral like Confucianism was and is. Taoism is your choices, your consequences. This path is going to lead somewhere. This one's going to go someplace else. You might like one or the other better, but neither is good or bad. So while you hear that, and again, the grain of salt, that's my that's the way I think about that. And that's what I've learned.
Well, the reason I ask is the concept of qi as an energy is if that energy can have negative forms.
I would say no. It would be our interpretation that would say that's a negative thing. But in the most pure kind of view of it, I would say no. The outcome might not be great or what you want, but neither good nor bad. What I'll say about Chinese medicine is that Chinese medicine defines all different kinds of qi. For technical reasons. We use it for diagnosis and for treatment of people, for understanding all phenomena. And just interesting to know that medicine is one of the areas where qi is technically most developed and diversified. A couple things that ring true is that qi in Chinese medicine is mostly defined and named according to its location and functions. So you can have nourishing qi or defensive qi. You can have organ qi, kidney qi, meridian qi, leg qi. You know, those are places where it is. The functions are many as well, and that's the other way that they're defined in medicine.
What about when these
most people have heard stagnant chi. Stuck chi, yeah. The opposite, the yin of that yang, or the yang of that yin, is flowing chi. But stagnant chi is common. Also, the others common when you hear is deficient chi. And of course, there's excess as well. And there are many more.
Is there extra chi?
Extra chi?
Yeah.
Hey, well, that's the 24th meaning. The philosophers, I've got to... we're doing okay here. I have a couple of quotations that I want to read because they're very cool. So I'll say very briefly again about philosophy. Qi in philosophy is, I mean, that's something that could spend any number of evenings like this talking about and really getting bored over. But the philosophers sought to understand all phenomena in terms of qi. They were particularly interested in the momentum and movement and connection aspects of qi. And I'm going to pretty much leave it at that. It's interesting that while it was a well-known and highly developed concept, again, it wasn't overused. Lao Tzu's book, The Tao Te Ching, mentions qi three times in its 73 chapters or something like that. So it was very important every time it mentioned it. Again, no extra words, and every word counts. So some of the other classics, a lot more mention of it. And then when you get again to the people explaining things later on, they talk about it much more. So a couple of quotes from philosophy here, and then we'll talk about the arts just a little bit. This is from a gentleman who's alive today, Professor Chu Chengyan. This is in his preface to a book about qi. He wrote this in 2000. These ancient philosophers believed that birth, existence, transformation, and disappearance of everything in the world happen under the influence of qi. The birth and death of heaven, earth, wind, clouds, thunder, rain, mountains, water, forest, woods, animals, insects, flowers, all are caused by qi. The birth, aging, sickness, and death of human beings, the persistence of time and the winds of fate, the prosperity and misfortunes of the country, disasters and blessings, all cannot be explained without qi. And that, that again just shows how much it is a part of life, and understood, if not technically, by an average Chinese person to be a part of all of that. And they would, of course, know all those modern phrases and expressions and would be using those a lot.
Dave, I have a question.
Yes.
How could something so fundamental in Chinese and so touching of every aspect of life be missing in Western culture?
Well, that's a great question, too. And so it must not be entirely
what's
missing.
What's the correlate in Western culture?
Well, people do study that, and I purposefully didn't go there in this talk. I'm already sort of running out of time. But there are correlations, and to be honest, I'm not so interested in that. I used to be more interested in that.
I don't know what you're referring to. In what? In what the correlate is in Western culture?
Well, I mean, I don't know if I can answer that. But there, especially probably in Western philosophies, you could find some similar ideas. Yeah, in terms of Western culture, in terms of everyday life, no, I don't think we quite have anything like it. So, yeah.
Just curious.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. In philosophy, I think it is addressed. In everyday life, probably not so much. But we do, I mean, we understand the idea of something that motivates life, you know, that makes things happen. We do, you know, we have ideas for that, a number of different ones. You know, one of which is God and spirit, certainly. But I'd like to finish off today, I'll say that qi is also in the arts, in the performing arts, in the visual arts, painting, calligraphy. Your art is, you're supposed to be able to see the practitioner's qi or spirit in their art. It's supposed to come through. And it's an expression of life. I was in China in 2000, and I went to the Summer Palace, which is one of the big palaces in Beijing. And there's one, in these buildings, there are a lot of walkways and covered roofs, and underneath all those roofs are painted, beautiful paintings of scenes and mythology and all sorts of things. There's only one small part of the Summer Palace that has paintings from the old days that were not whitewashed during the Cultural Revolution and destroyed. Since then, all the old stuff that was destroyed has been painted over, but that's modern. The old ones are more faded, but the life in them is unmistakable. The difference between those old paintings and the modern ones is night and day in terms of what it evokes in you and makes you feel. And that's, you don't have to understand qi to look at that. And people understand that from looking at any kind of great art. You know, we have terms like it speaks to us. There's more to it than just there. There's that energy inside it. And so that's the important thing in the arts. The way it's applied in different arts is a bit different. So let me finish off here so we can practice for a few minutes. I'm glad we got a few questions in along the way. This is a new lecture for me, so whenever I do a new one, I never know quite how much material to put in. So here are two quotations about painting. I'm sure there are some artists here, and I think everybody will be able to feel something from this. This first one from the Tang Dynasty, records of famous paintings from throughout the dynasties. Ancient painting can transform action directly from form, yet still uphold the bones of qi. Seek the painting out of the form. This is difficult to explain to lay people. Contemporary painting, though possessed of form, lacks the charm of qi. Therefore, utilize the charm of qi to accomplish the composition of painting, and the form will be implicit. And then a gentleman, Zhang Geng, from the Qing Dynasty, which is much more recent, finished up in the late 1800s, turn of the century, a discussion of painting from Lu Mountain, and this goes on from there. There is the charm of qi transmitted via the ink, some via the brush, some through action without intention. The highest level is that transmitted through actions with no intention. The next is action with intention. The next is that which is transmitted through the brush. The lowest is that sent through the ink. What does it mean to send it through the ink? It means the painting is accomplished by spreading the ink like a halo around the sketched out drawing. What is it that is called transmitted via the brush? It means the use of the dry brush to run about the ink strokes with thorough strength so that light itself flows out. What is meant by action with intention? It means the artist can liberate the method of using the brush and the movement of the ink so that they correspond to whatever the intention is, sparse or dense, varied amounts, thick or light, dried or moist. All can exist in perfect arrangement. What is meant by action without intention? It means the artist fixes his attention and concentration, and then the vision flows out through the movements of the wrist. The original intention is one thing, but suddenly it appears completely different. It comes out just like that, sent out with no intention. You can say it is enough, but in fact it is not enough. How can you call it enough when there is no way to add it up? It is originally beyond the feelings of the brush and the weight of the ink. It comes from the thriving pivot of heaven. Yet it can only be sensed by one who is tranquil. Even the slightest delay will confuse the mind, and it disappears in the ink. So, that's better than anything I could say. And so we'll finish the talk part of this with that. What I'd like to do now is have everybody stand up and just spread out a little bit so that ideally you have about, you know, this much room next to you. So you may want to stagger yourselves a little bit. We're going to stand in one place, and you can face any way that you would like to. This exercise we'll finish up with is to develop and strengthen the lungs and lung qi. And it's called the lung healing sound from a set of exercises called the 8 healing sounds of Yin Style Bagua. It is done with a breath, and the basic movement is that we open our arms out to the outside and bring them up and over in front of us as if they're against an imaginary wall in front of us, and they slide down. Just naturally coming back down to our sides, and we begin again. This part is done with an inhale. Just standing naturally, you do want to separate your feet a little bit, and your exhale as the hands come down. So the important thing with this tonight is make yourself comfortable. We'll try and do this at a pace that's very comfortable. This is an easy one to do, but if this doesn't feel right to you, just take a break. If it's too slow or too fast, follow your own pace. When we exhale, we're going to make a light with an open mouth. That's an A-H. We're going to start just like that. So we stand well. Inhale chi. Your mind is just quiet. Very relaxed, stretching a little, opening up. Letting everything relax. Continuous movement, continuous breath. So we're breathing chi. That's the air, the qi in the air on the outside. The qi in our bodies is motivating the practice and the movement. Do a couple more of these with a very light tone. Still moving very smoothly. Bring your hands up as if holding a large ball. Bring them together. See if you notice any feeling or sensation as they come closer together, and then pull apart. New to this, you may or may not. You might feel a little warmth, a little feeling of the hands wanting to be pushed apart, or maybe not. This is a method that we use to kind of start to make it a bit tangible. And then to close, we gather in. Place our hands over your lower belly. This is the place in the body that qi is stored. And we just take a brief moment to become tranquil, allow our bodies to absorb the practice we've just done. And then relaxing your hands and arms, opening your eyes. And I'd like to thank you all very much for coming out tonight. I hope in the midst of this you have at least one or two ideas of what qi is.
Thank you so much. And thank you all for coming out tonight to Many Rivers. This is just a couple of announcements. There's a donation bowl over on the counter. We hope you will contribute to it. We split that with our speakers to support their work and to maintain this space for this sort of thing. We have some books and other items on related topics to tonight's talk over here for you to look at. And thank you so much again for coming tonight.
Come back next week and hear Michael speak.
That's right. Oh, and I'm sure you can talk to David about his ongoing classes here in Sebastopol, so don't forget.
Yes, I did not bring a schedule, but I do have a website, of course, and that's got all the info on it. You can keep those handouts if you're interested in them.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Nice to see you too, Tina.
Tell me what that wonderful quote is.
Oh, the strokes. Yeah, let me find that. That's just, that was wonderful. I forget the book that I got it from, to tell you the truth.
No, it's just the...
Probably the last one. That's usually the case.
Small town.
Oh, great.
It was called Discussion of Painting for Blue Mountain. Okay. You can write that down if you'd like to.
Yeah, great. Thank you very much. Thank you. That was really interesting. It makes me realize how complicated Chinese is.
It's amazing. That is, yeah, that's Dr. Xie Pei Qi. That's the guy that I learned a lot of my Taoyuan stuff from.
I went to an exhibition at the Asian Museum last year, and they were talking about all the plays on words and how this one sounds like that one, so this means that, and the idea of fish meaning money because they cut.
It just goes on and on.
It was just amazing.
Yeah.
And then what you do with this one concept. And
how
how
far.
It's amazing. I can see
the video. Cool. Yeah, it is.
Just to
realize, you know, that somebody was thinking like this. You know, just wow.
Yeah.
It's pretty neat.
But thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for
sharing
coming.
Well, I'm glad I came.
Yeah, I'm glad you came too.
I agree.
That was very interesting.
Good.
Yeah. Me too.
Sometimes I, you know, sometimes I wonder, but I'm glad it came through reasonably well. Thank you, Elle Marie, for coming out. Thank you.
And thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Mary, as always. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Thanks for coming, dude.
Absolutely.
That was
it was fun for me. I mean, I did some research. I had a pretty good idea you know, what I was going to talk about. It's always fun for me to go further into some things I didn't know about.
I kind of missed the wave this cycle.
Yeah, well, I
got really sick for like five or six weeks.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
Like a chest or bronchial thing?
Yeah, that just like kept hanging on and was maybe a couple different viruses and like a bacterial thing after that.
Oh, man.
Well,
I'm glad you're still there. Yeah.
And I don't know.
It's like the material that goes, you know, under the hot.
Exactly. Yeah. That's it. But it has wave. It's not like a PVC strip. It's exactly that.
Well, that's understandable. Yeah. Fine. You know, hopefully if you get interested again, I
wonder if I can't but it's going to rain again, so it's
I would go to Sebastopol Harbor and talk to them. Because I have...
But, you know, as long as the water is going, we can...
You could also do it in another section
of
it and
clamp it off. Yeah, I don't need a clamp. I know. And who do you call to fix it?
Go to Hardwell. Go to the
hospital. Yeah, but they have to fix it. And somebody has to fix it.
I don't know, but you can't.
Yeah.
But you don't want to have
it. Yeah, no. What's that?
That's perfect.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming. I appreciate it.
Please go back and stay back.
Yeah, these will go around that area there. We'll take care of it.
Just one thing, you know, your example that you're reading about how intuitive non-stop through behavior is stronger than there's an experiment that's really quite nice that if you take a very sensitive millivolt meter and attach it to a plant, and if you deliberately say, I'm going to walk towards this plant, the reading on the millivolt meter is kind of this. But if you're talking and you just sort of spontaneously go over this way without thinking,
goes
up. So the spontaneous movement has much more charge to it than...
Oh, interesting. Oh, that's very interesting.
It's a nice
example. Did you have the little cards?
Oh, yeah. We sure do. Starting to clean up and stuff.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Good night.
Night.
Yeah, you're so
very good, thank you.
Thanks, yeah. As usual, ran out of time a little at the end.
You are an ambitious guy.
Yeah.
I need to get a
couple things. I also seem to pick these small topics. I thought about that as it was coming in. You know, the last one was the history of Chinese medicine. I said, okay, how much time have I got here?
Yeah.
This one is just like, let's talk about one of the most important things in Chinese culture that spans all of it over 3,000 years.
Well, narrowly to the
Stuart's mother.
that has to work late.
This hasn't been stopped. This hasn't been stopped.